Ken Forrester, Executive Director at Momenta. Welcome to our Digital Thread podcast, produced by, for, and about digital industry leaders. In this series of conversations, we capture insights from the best and brightest minds in digital industry. They're executives, entrepreneurs, advisors, and other thought leaders. What they have in common is, like our team at Momenta, they are deep industry operators. We hope you find these podcasts informative, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Good day and welcome to episode 208 of our Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. Today, I'm pleased to bring back Michael Rissi, a founding partner at Seek Corporation, transforming industrial process data into actionable intelligence. His work at Seek built on 25 years of experience spanning traditional software businesses, startups, and large enterprise management roles within Microsoft. Now, Michael joined us for episode 198 earlier this year, during which we started to deep dive on cloud vendors and operational technology. By popular request, and honestly, I've got a lot of feedback from our listening audience on this one, we brought him back in a rest of the story episode. So, Michael, welcome back to our Momenta Digital Thread podcast.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back.
And again, by popular demand, so you left a nice cliffhanger hanging out there and certainly hit a thread of a lot of interest among our listeners. So let's just dive right in. So first question, what do you see as the evolving role of cloud platform companies in OT? And let me be clear, in our last episode, I referred to these as the hyperscalers, which is the popular terms in between you and Andrew Oben at Bank of America. You convinced me that we should be referring to them as cloud platform companies or vendors. So that's what I'm referring to when I talk about the evolving role of such companies in OT.
Got it. Let me start by paraphrasing Winston Churchill. Where are we in this market? And I think we're at the end of the beginning, right? If you think about the start of the cloud, whether it's AWS or Azure, you're talking roughly 10 years in market from 2000, depends on when you measure, when they announced it or whether when they shipped it, but 2004, 2006, 2008, 2010. So we've got a decade-ish into this cloud business and this into this cloud world. And what's happened is that Microsoft and Azure and AWS have both started with basic workloads and then kept moving up the stack or moving to the next workload and the next workload. And for a while in, let's see, 2014, 2016, it seemed like the manufacturing workloads were going to be owned by automation vendors, GE and Predix, you may recall. And Jeff Immelt saying that GE was going to be a top 10 software company, and obviously Siemens with MindSphere and other initiatives. And both through, I think, the challenges that they found in being software companies and enabling that experience, as well as the enthusiasm for the data that's associated with manufacturing. In 2018, that was to me the latter part of 2018, the tipping point, you had articles in The Economist and the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, talking about Microsoft and AWS focusing on oil and gas in particular, but on manufacturing in general. And that was the start of their investments, their new services and product offerings. And you get to the point where you are today, right? You look at CERAWeek, which is the big multinational executive oil and gas conference. Microsoft and AWS, both big sponsors. You look at ADIPEC, Abu Dhabi International Petroleum Exposition. Microsoft and AWS, both big sponsors. And so you've gone from where stage one, Microsoft and AWS had other interests. Stage two, GE, MindSphere, and others were going to lead the effort on manufacturing in the cloud. Stage three, nope, here come AWS and Microsoft. And the momentum is there. The investments that they're making are there. And it's becoming more prevalent or sort of, I don't know what, for example, a customer that I've never seen one that doesn't have a cloud roadmap, right? It's just part of the thinking. And as I said, it's the end of the beginning. And now we're moving into sort of production or actual implementations of these ideas.
It's interesting you quantify it as the end of the beginning. Of course, the other side of it is kind of the beginning of the end. And I'll quote somebody you and I like on, that's certainly Andrew Oben of B of A, the one who covers all the industrialists. So he recently wrote in a report on Rockwell Automation, particularly, that, and I'll quote, the challenge from cloud platform companies appears to have diminished recently. But given these companies' financial capabilities, we think are still worth watching. It's interesting because Andrew's been, even in the beginning of the year report, which we talked about in the last podcast, has been quite bullish on the cloud platform. So for him to take a neutral, effectively, position on this, I think is quite interesting in that regard. Thus the comment about the maybe the beginning of the end. What do you make of his perspective?
I guess two thoughts on that. First of all, he said it, given their financial capabilities, you don't want to count them out. Let's take a super specific example. Microsoft announced something called Time Series Insights, or TSI. I think that was the spring of 2017. And that was basically time series data storage and trending, right? And that was its focus. It was the endpoint for their IoT offerings where the data would flow in. It was an interesting concept around enabling both hot and cold storage. So you had hot data that was more expensive and recent, and then cold data that would be cheaper and be stored more efficiently. That did not work out. And that service was ended, I want to say last spring, so it was out for about 5 years. And they've refocused now on ADX, Azure Data Explorer, as their primary store for time series data, and looking more to partners to provide the analytics on top. Now, that's what you can do if you're an AWS or Microsoft. You can take, imagine a five-year view, figuring out you didn't have it right, and restarting and saying, nope, we're going to go in this other direction. That's what those financial capabilities mean. And so I wouldn't count them out. The other thing that's interesting is, I don't know that the world has figured out or has the right answer for how this is exactly going to work. I'm not the first person to say this, right? But what happens to the Purdue model? Is it the end of the Purdue model? And what that means is what used to be an on-premise five-layer network and security architecture, well, the top of that Purdue model has moved to the cloud. The enterprise applications have moved to the cloud between what's on-prem, what's in the cloud, and which workloads will go to the cloud. I think that still has to be sorted out. I'm a very strong believer that the data, as we've talked about, is going to move to the cloud. Analytics applications and machine learning, those are going to be run in the cloud. I think APM, asset performance management, is absolutely an application category that can and should be run in the cloud for integration with other systems and for centralization purposes. There's some sort of data hub or asset model that should go to the cloud. But the details of how that works and which service you're using, that's not known yet. So as that gets more clear, I think that'll make it easier for the automation, or excuse me, for the cloud platforms to sort of say, okay, these are the services either we need to build or we need to partner for. But right now, that is, again, we're at the end of the beginning. That's a common conversation, but it hasn't landed yet in architecture and guidelines and blueprints and things like that. So we've got 5-10 years to go in this transition, and the clouds will be there given their financial capability. And as these services sort themselves out, it'll get more clear about where they want to invest and how they want to accomplish it.
So I think one of the, certainly the triggers for Andrew's comments and what has happened subsequent to your and my conversation earlier this year is that Microsoft laid off a large part of their quote unquote, you know, industrial or manufacturing team. GCP, for probably the third time in their history, blew out their whole team, right? They had a dream team twice that I'm aware of. And, you know, the whole team left. Literally, I understand it was like, you just couldn't log in the morning. And oh, by the way, we cut your accounts, right? All the way across the board. I'm hearing this from very senior people, right? So it was a hard cut in that regard. AWS, it appears, has, you know, at least maintained, if not continued their trajectory. So I'm wondering in the end, is this just a two-horse race now? Is it just Microsoft and AWS going after this? Or do you still see other potential cloud vendors who might make some traction here?
I've been emphatic, and I realize I needed to put some context around this or somebody will get annoyed with me. But I've been emphatic that it's a two-horse race. It absolutely is. There's only a couple companies on the planet that can put two data centers in every interesting geography, which is what you need for data regulations and for backup within certain within a country. That said, the audience for those types of requirements are going to be your multinationals, right? As soon as you start spanning country borders. If you're in China, then Alibaba is a conversation. But as soon as you get to multinational enterprise organizations, like their checklist is, are you where I operate? And do you have two centers where I operate? And do you support the data regulations associated with my country? And when you put those three things together, the list of companies gets very short. They could do that, gets very short. The other thing is not just the data rules and the physical infrastructure of these cloud platforms. It's what I call the dark arts of the cloud platforms. Microsoft, for example, has something called MAC, which is the Microsoft Azure Commitment to Consume, and AWS has something called EDP, which is the Enterprise Discount Program. And those are both programs where if you commit to certain spend limits on those cloud programs, you get discounts. And what that makes you want to do is spend on those platforms, right? Because that's where you're going to get the discount and you need to achieve the spend level. And so what this means is you've got senior IT and procurement involved saying, look, I want to hit these spend levels so I can get my discount and we can pay less for our cloud services. Well, imagine, what does that have to do with manufacturing software? Well, very little, except that IT now has their nose in it and their self-interest in it. IT also has their nose in it because they're going to want to have a cogent strategy for their cloud platform, which means more things on one cloud or on the same cloud or the roadmap for that cloud. Security obviously has a interest in this, the cloud security folks, so SOC compliance and things like that. So the ability to sort of checklist things that don't have to do with how wonderful the manufacturing software is or the manufacturing services or cloud services, but have to do with the ability to get it through IT, the procurement, the security and the strategy. That lends itself very well, again, to a Microsoft or an AWS as opposed to another company that isn't going to be able to offer discounts or isn't going to be able to, you know, have senior relationships with IT, you know, the CIO, if not the CEO of the company. You look at companies, you say, who are your most strategic vendor? AWS and Azure. So for all of these reasons, it's a very, I would say at least, it's a very, very steep cliff from AWS and Azure down to whoever's in third place. And the last thought on this is, you know, what happens in real open software markets? Software markets consolidate. That's what happens. You get down to a couple. You got your SAP and not SAP. You got Google and not Google. You've got Salesforce and not Salesforce. You've got Microsoft Office and not Microsoft Office. So just the natural consolidation from economies of scale and network effect, plus the incentives in IT, plus the investment requirements to build and run these data centers, that's why I'm emphatic about an AWS and Azure world. And again, I'll leave the caveats in that, you know, that's a multinational company perspective. There could be local organizations within one country, or as I said, Alibaba in China, that will be the exceptions that prove the rule.
So this has provided a pretty good context of kind of the landscape, the vendors, et cetera. Let's maybe now notch down and talk about how should OT companies think about and plan around the cloud, which kind of gets to the point that we talked about last time in terms of your prediction that they will be.
The interesting thing is how well the enthusiasms align. As the cloud platform, super enthusiastic about manufacturing workloads and manufacturing data and manufacturing business opportunities, the customers of those, the companies, the actual manufacturing firm, they're driving just as hard towards cloud-based solutions for their challenges, right? They want, where's machine learning going to run? Where are your data scientists working? In the cloud. Where do you want the manufacturing data for the machine learning and the data scientists? In the cloud, right? What are you trying to accomplish? Better efficiency, optimization, sustainability by looking across our plants. Then the data from those individual plants should be rolled up and accessible. Where? In the cloud. You know, what's a modern way of working, helping to attract younger employees? Well, you create a center of excellence, you know, in a major city where it's easier for them to live and work, and you bring or you enable the data access for these experts in a particular asset class or role to work on the data, regardless of where the plant is, right? So the center of excellence motion, it's something I've seen in a number of companies. So what's the best way to architect that? Oh, that's going to be in the cloud. Well, how do you get really smart about your cloud data or your manufacturing data? You contextualize it. You put it in, you know, in the context of other business applications and outcomes. Where are those applications running? Oh, those are running in the cloud. And so you start going down this list of what manufacturing organizations want, hiring new employees, tapping machine learning, looking across plants. All of those things seem to point to the same place, which is this data and these workloads are going to happen in the cloud. So they are moving to the cloud as much as the cloud platforms are interested in them moving to the cloud. There's enthusiasm on both sides. And that's why, you know, again, back to Churchill, that's why this is the end of the beginning. these things are aligning and starting. We're not in the beginning anymore. We're moving into the alignment of these two perspectives into execution.
So what are some of the best practices that you've seen around cloud deployment for OT companies then?
Obviously, maybe not obviously, but certainly not analysis paralysis. As I said before, this decoupling or Purdue 2.0 has not sorted itself out. I'm sure there'd be some amazing conversations among solution architects and vendors and customers around, okay, what is the balancing act between on-prem and cloud? But it hasn't sorted itself out. And the challenge from that is that you get into this analysis paralysis of, okay, I want to get everything right, and then I'm going to enable the value. And somehow turning that around so value can happen sooner, so you know what you need, needs to happen, right? So that you don't architect for something and then show up, oh, whoops, that actually wasn't the most important piece. So the getting fast results so you know what it is that you're designing for would be one. The second one would be there's no value in the data itself, particularly time series data. I mean, a bucket of time series data is a bucket of time series data. There's no value in the data. It's not like relational data where you've got transactions and names and important information. In time series data, you've got zeros and ones until you contextualize it. And so enabling value by various audiences on that data, super important, right? It's not just store the data. That's not a benefit. How do you enable value among the audiences? And I think about certainly data scientists and machine learning, how can they get to it and get value? That's a very different data access pattern than your process engineers that may be looking at ad hoc type scenarios, or if you're managers or you're monitoring applications, that's more of a streaming context of getting information out and turning it into value. And finally, you probably want something structured or semi-structured so that you can work for your business analysts in a Power BI, Tableau, or other product. So you have to think about these various users and the different data access patterns they require to get the value that's possible out of that storage system. So getting to value or avoiding analysis paralysis, because you probably don't know what you'll actually need, and then thinking about the value at the endpoint among those different audiences, among their data access patterns, among their different tool sets. Those would be high on my list. And part of the reason I say that is, Ken, you and I probably have seen a lot of architecture diagrams where on the left side, there's sensors and data sources. And in the middle, there's this big intestinal looking thing of wonderfulness, which is the data lake, the data hub, the data something, whatever. And over on the far right side in really small font, it's like, and here are the users of this. And it's just not drawn to proportion. The value is on the far right side where the data scientists and the business analysts and the process engineers and the monitoring applications, the managers get value. And I don't know how you design that architecture with them in the middle, but they should their use and access and value should certainly be central or more central to those discussions.
I certainly agreed. I would offer that those users have probably a heightened expectation with the, I'll call it hype of generative AI, large language models, call it ChatGPT. If I can use it to find the best pizza recipe for the local region, why can't I use it to analyze my process, right? And I'm not kidding. As venture capitalists, we are getting inundated with companies popping up to literally try to solve for this. But where we're seeing the greatest impact is back into, as you describe it, the intestinal block in the middle, especially data ops, context, setting, et cetera. So I'm curious, what impact are you seeing in terms of OT based on now this interest in, you know, generative AI, and where do you see that going?
Well, I certainly, boy, what an interesting 6 months it's been, right? When we thought the internet took off fast, this is incredible. How much awareness, how much use? I guess we didn't, well, at least in the early days, you couldn't use the internet as easily to, you know, write your term papers as a college student or high school student. So maybe that's part of the difference. But the issue I've seen previously and I still see is, and this, by the way, I'm borrowing again. Before I had Winston Churchill, now I'm going to borrow from Martin, who's the CEO of Raven AI, one of your investments. We've had some great discussions about the AI in the manufacturing context. What's the Tesla moment, right? Have we reached the Tesla moment for AI in manufacturing? And I think Martin and I at least agree, no, we have not, right? It's one thing, somehow we can get into a car First of all, you can get into a car with a stranger. That's an Uber moment. But when you get in a car that's self-driven, you know, that's the Tesla moment. And like right now, when there's a Tesla error and there's a crash based on the failure of the driving system, I mean, it's national news. That's one car and its passengers, right? As interesting as this innovation is, how can it be trusted in a manufacturing context where safety of the employees is the number one priority? What's the balancing act? So I think what you just said was really interesting, which is maybe it's not at the plant operation level, but maybe it is at getting data right for use and access. But when do we get to the Tesla moment in trust? That's still interesting. I mean, machine learning's okay. That's one thing. Those are algorithms that people understand or are comfortable with. But how do you get to that Tesla moment where you don't understand it, but you still trust it and you're going to make a decision on it? Whoosh. I think we can have a great conference on that for several days and get perspectives on what's it going to take and how will that work. And in the meantime, the hype is just going to keep going. You know, whether you're a venture capitalist, whether you're the parent of a student, whether you're a senior executive, it's like, how do we use this? How do we use this? How do we use this? And that just runs up a brick wall called, look, I'm not trusting the safety of my employees and colleagues to something I don't understand, period. Boom. So get worked out.
Yeah, look, if nothing else, we've talked about this a lot internally in terms of investment thesis. It is amplifying the simple fact that OT data is relatively unclean, i.e. your context is not always set. A lot of it, to your point about time series data, is almost irrelevant in terms of the large language model style learning capabilities. But what we're seeing is a general uptick in every single company we've invested in that operate in, quote unquote, the data ops space, right? All of a sudden, a lot of interest coming in because that realization is hitting pretty hard. And all of a sudden, these companies are becoming interesting properties. So it goes all the way back to your analogy about the people on the left there. I think as those people discover new tools and capabilities, and ChatGPT certainly would qualify there, it forces a lot more, if you will, modernization or acceleration of the rest of that sequence from sensors through, right? And I think that's what we're seeing right now, interestingly enough.
Yep.
So look, been great conversation. The last time we had talked, you mentioned right at the end that you had just left Seek at that point. So I'm kind of curious, what's transpired since then and what are you up to?
Well, obviously still very interested in this space where manufacturing meets software meets cloud, right? This transition, again, the end of the beginning, and in particular, thinking about those early workloads that I mentioned, like time series data storage, manufacturing analytics, APM as an application space, and then the data hub data layer. But what is going to transfer, how it's going to transfer, who are the interesting startups in that transfer to the cloud? That's been my primary focus. And it's just really incredible to see the momentum, interesting startups, interesting places.
And what I hear from across our portfolio, and I'd say generally in the ecosystem, is you are having an impact in a very broad way across a lot of companies. Martin, as you mentioned at Raven AI, is certainly a proponent of yours. I could almost say I'm a raving fan. So if you're doing that across the board, it sounds like you're up to great things. And I'm glad to count you as part of our Momenta ecosystem in that regard.
Well, it's awesome to hear, Ken. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. And the questions and conversations that come out of here just always take my thinking to this on another level. So very much appreciate it.
As well. Really appreciate you taking the time again to do this deep dive with us. And certainly look forward to what the next conversation may be. So this has been Michael Risse, former Chief Strategy Officer at Seek. Thank you for listening, and please join us for the next episode of our Digital Thread podcast series. We wish you a great day. Take care. You've been listening to the Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed the discussion, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Please check our website at momenta.one for archived versions of podcasts, as well as resources to help with your digital industry journey. Thank you for listening.